bigger priority of people not being killed by the state is an incredibly problematic idea here. It's an incredibly, incredibly problematic idea here. You've been listening to Not Another Sports Show, NASRadicalSports.com, a radical look at sports. We've just been talking about the horrid handling of NFL protests by ownership, the new Miami Marlins owners acting a whole lot like the old Miami Marlins owners. And coming up, we'll be talking about a much lesser reported story involving Loyola Chicago and the NCAA still trying to justify not paying the athletes for their labor, as well as a roundup of other college sports news. Well, jumping into unpaid college sports news, we've got a whole lot to talk about with the national championship game and stuff that took place. And we do have Loyola Chicago, the men's basketball team there, making it to the Final Four, being the Cinderella run of the men's league, the women's basketball championship having some amazing moments as well with Notre Dame and those buzzer-beating three-pointers. It was absolutely fantastic to watch the clips of that. Well, Loyola Chicago has been getting a lot of attention for their Cinderella stay in the men's basketball tournament, but non-tenure track faculty staged a one-day strike at the university that was getting a lot of attention after their men's basketball team made it all the way to the Final Four. The non-tenure track faculty wanted to highlight the fact that they have not gotten raises over the last 10 years, but that tuition has increased from $28,000 a year to $42,000 a year. And 57% of the faculty at the Jesuit colleges like Loyola are now adjuncts. And they're not seeing raises. The amount of pay that they're being given is not enough. And so they staged a one-day strike. Initially, the university refused to negotiate with the union after the union got recognition in the election and tried to get the election results tossed. They're now doing the same with the graduate employees at Loyola Chicago. Yet the school has money to spend on a $18 million practice facility for basketball and volleyball. They don't have the money to give non-tenure track employees raises. They're trying to battle the grad employees at the university from having access to a union. But they've got the money to spend on $18 million practice facilities for basketball and volleyball. Priorities, everyone. Priorities. And spending money on athletics on all sorts of new stuff rather than giving it to the players and giving it to the academics who do the real labor here. That the money could easily be spent and reprioritized in those fashions. And that's not just me saying it. That's also the editorial of the Loyola Phoenix. Quote, "The hypocrisy of a Jesuit Catholic university, which aims to uphold a mission of social justice, meanwhile failing to provide its workers with adequate salary and benefits, hasn't gone unnoticed," close quote. And that's absolutely true here. It's bad enough that a university wants to keep a set of workers being inappropriately treated. That's bad enough in and of itself. But when it is, as they note, a Jesuit Catholic university which upholds a mission of social justice, that's when it becomes a doubly complicated problem and a doubly more hypocritical problem. That they're trying to proclaim that they stand for the Catholic ideas of social justice after Vatican II, while also wanting to keep graduate employees poor, while wanting to keep non-tenure track faculty poor, and then spending the money on building basketball and volleyball practice facilities. Just shameful. But it's not just them that don't want to see people get paid. The NCAA, of course, has doubled and tripled down and quadrupled down during the basketball tournaments of the NCAA, talking about how college basketball players and college football players can't get paid. President Mark Emmert was out saying, quote, "Well, I think you've got to remember this in the context of higher education. These are educational universities and colleges that are conducting these games, and you have to abide by the educational laws of the United States. You've got to provide women with the same opportunities and support that men receive. If you were going to pay salaries to male athletes, you'd have to do the same thing for female athletes, and you'd have to come up with some explanation to the federal government as to why you would possibly not do it for one group versus another, and I think that's completely untenable. I think the other issue is that you're going to move to a model where you were just paying football and basketball athletes. At least that's the argument that always comes forward. The way athletic departments are going to do that is they're going to eliminate other sports. There's really no other way for them to do it. Yeah, if you just looked at the revenue from football, you might be able to figure out how to pay football players, but you would eliminate all the other sports that are out there in order to do that and take away opportunities from men and women. Close quote. Okay, here's the thing. Title IX does not say that all players have to be paid. That's not what Title IX says. It's not. It does not say anything related to that sort. And there are plenty of ways for them to be able to do this. And the fantastic work of Think Progress's Lindsay Gibbs on how Title IX can still be actively enforced and vigorously enforced while allowing athletes to get paid is some fantastic work. And paying them the same is not what Title IX requires. It's not the same thing. It's a misdirection play to try to highlight this issue. And there's plenty of other ways for people to get paid. And it's not eliminating sports or taking away sports. We had the Big Ten's, you know, director and their commissioner talking about how they might have to go to Division III if athletes were going to get paid. And all of these doom and gloom statements. It reminded me much in the 1980s when people on film were mad that VCRs were going to get sold and it was going to be the death of the cinema industry. No, it's led to, you know, more issues and people being able to watch movies at home. If you're really, really concerned about sports not getting eliminated, there's a real easy way to do it. Eliminate the huge paychecks that go to the adults, the commissioners of the different conferences, the coaches who get millions and millions and millions of dollars in the way that only CEOs have outpaced them in the amount of raises that they get. You can take away huge amounts of money from the coaches and lower their compensation levels, that you have lots and lots of money. And you can go back to the former head of the NCAA who wrote a book about his experience. Ernest Byers wrote about his experience and said that it's a misdirection claim to claim that teams are poor, that it's a misdirection, that they make a lot of money, and it's misdirection and it's a lie to say that they're too poor. It's a sham that's put on us that they don't have the money to do this, and it's entirely something they have available. But of course, when you're running out of defenses to justify an unjust, hypocritical system, you go with all the other things that you can. But I guess if you can get on Dancing with the Stars like Notre Dame's Erica Ogunbowale, then it's all good and those players can keep their money. You know, if they get on Dancing with the Stars. The rules about amateurism and the rules about the supposed protection of the athletes are about neither one of those things. Otherwise, Miss Ogunbowale would not be allowed on Dancing with the Stars because they need to protect the athletes and their image and that they need to maintain their status as an amateur. And cases like this one just show how logic and reason can dictate the day and that these rules don't need to be there. Because they knew in this particular case, after her buzzer-beating three-pointers and the national public notoriety they got, if they didn't let her, the public would be mad and they would be making statements and the NCAA would have to walk it back and let her go anyway. They knew that going in. If the rules don't matter here and they can find all their intellectual exercises to show why the rules don't matter here, then it lays bare that the rules don't actually matter, doesn't it? If the rules don't matter here, then it lays bare that these rules just don't matter. Except these rules matter to keep athletes broke at every opportunity where the NCAA, its member schools, and its member conferences think the public will be on their side. Every time that they think they can get away with it, with the public being on their side, every time they think the general public's going to be okay with it, they are more than happy to enforce these rules in keeping the athletes broke and keeping these athletes poor. It's not an ethical calculus. It's a political one. And as we stand as the just a couple of weeks after the assassination of Dr. King, Dr. King being there and talking about the sanitation workers and recognizing during one of those last nights when he was giving a speech that his concern was not what's going to happen to him if he keeps talking about these sanitation workers, but what's going to happen to the sanitation workers if he doesn't. And that's largely the issue here, that we have these players who are not getting paid. They are making billions for schools and the NCAA and the member franchises. There's so much money coming into this, and they are getting nothing from what their value and what their labor creates. And to say that there's rules for the protection of athletes and amateurism, we of course know all of those rules are shams, that they were legal fictions that were drummed up to have to avoid paying the players and keeping any kind of compensation coming to these players. And the fact that a number of these rules have changed over time as resistance movements have built up and continued talk of them have built up, that we've seen the slow erosion of all of these rules that were once meant as standards to protect amateurism, and that they couldn't change those rules until it became publicly untenable to keep those rules, and then the rule minorly changed, or that it was going to be untenable to keep that policy about protecting athletes until it was shown that the rule was very much vigorously opposed by a majority of the public. This isn't an ethical calculus on behalf of the NCAA. It's a political calculus to keep players broke. That's what it is, that's what it always is, and it's what it's going to continue to be. Meanwhile, the athletic director of Idaho University has been put on leave during an investigation of how they mishandled some complaints. And trigger warning, we are going to be talking about issues of sexual assault here. The allegations are that the athletic director mishandled a case of sexual assault so badly in 2012 and 2013 that involved a football player that it led to some very serious issues, and he's now been put on leave during this investigation. A woman says that she was assaulted by a then wide receiver for the team. Another woman said the same wide receiver harassed her, and that the university never really did anything, nor did it admit its failures until 5 years later with the advance of the Me Too movement and the continued push on these sorts of issues. We also are going to be talking about more of these cases with Liberty University. The university has settled lawsuits, and yes, this is the same university that was started by Jerry Falwell, now currently run by his son, Jerry Falwell Jr., the right-wing university. The university has settled suits by former football players who allege defamation and Title IX violations. At this, they were expelled when, the same time, the school was hiring a bunch of people from Baylor, as they've been planning to send their football team to the big FBS football bowl division. And they hired a bunch of Baylor officials who are at the heart of the massive failure to handle sexual assault issues at the university, while also simultaneously trying to punish these players very, very vigorously and very, very harshly to try to take away from the fact that they were hiring a bunch of people who were at the heart of the institutional failure at Baylor. And speaking of big, massive institutional failures, Michigan State. The Michigan House of Representatives took time out of their busy schedule of giving Nestle free water while not giving more to residents of Flint, despite the fact that their pipes still need to be fixed, that there's still toxic lead in their water, but they're going to give Nestle huge amounts of free water. They took their time out of doing that to write a letter summarizing their look at the Michigan State handling of the Larry Nassar abuse scandal. They noted multiple places where Michigan State didn't stop Nassar, like putting him back at work before a police investigation was done, and then after they came forward with guidelines of how Larry Nassar should be treated in the future, decided not to enforce those guidelines. They also noted that medical records were not kept for many of Nassar's treatments / sexual assaults, and that many were kept that did not reference the full nature of the methods. The failure of keeping these records also allowed Nassar to argue that he never actually assaulted any of these students during his supposed treatments. The school didn't require chaperones to be in the exam room while he was treating minors. They didn't have a strong enough informed consent policy in place, which eventually allowed Nassar to abuse his patients without even having to tell them the thinly veiled excuse that this was somehow going to be a medical procedure. And how many times were treatments done where he never asked for payment? All of these things, mass institutional failure. And it's one thing to have a mass institutional failure being noted by a governmental body that's also engaged in massive institutional failures. Three former football players have reached a plea deal Donnie Corley, Josh King, and Demetric Vance pled out to a surveillance charge and seducing an unmarried woman to avoid a jail term for an alleged sexual assault. The survivor alleges that she was pulled into a bathroom by the three men and assaulted. And the prosecutor, Carol A. Seaman, wrote a statement about the surveillance charge and the fact that they are not going to be serving jail time, saying, quote, "When I began receiving media requests earlier today, I was at an event commemorating the life of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. on the 50th anniversary of his assassination. This anniversary is a reminder not only of how so much has changed, but also in how much of his cause remains undone. Dr. King said that the arc of the moral universe is long, but it bends towards justice. But he didn't mean that happens automatically or that it doesn't require us to work and change the system. We must have a legal framework that allows us to treat the facts of each criminal case proportionately, which the current laws sometimes make difficult. For cases that are submitted for our review, we look at multiple factors to try to craft an outcome that reflects the facts of the individual event. The use of seducing and debauching an unmarried female is one that prosecutors have used consistently but infrequently in the state of Michigan. The law itself is archaic, and while the statute itself is valid, it certainly wasn't enacted in a bygone era. The plea to seduction is a tool that we have as prosecutors, but an imperfect tool. It allows the criminal justice system to acknowledge the victim, and it provides an incentive for that offender to plea, in particular because it's not an offense that requires they register as a sex offender. The sex offender registry is a blunt instrument that I believe needs to be reformed and streamlined so that law enforcement can make better use of this information. It would be more effective as a law enforcement tool to keep the public safe if it targeted the cases that are most likely to result in recidivism, child abuse and child sexual assault, for example, or serial rapists. The sex offender registry is just one of the example of these types of cases where we have laws that are well-intentioned but go too far from their original intent and don't allow our courts to provide a proportionate response. We have seen people sentenced to a 40-year maximum sentence over 1 gram of cocaine or parents who are charged with child neglect for letting their kids walk home from the park. In recent cases of school threats and bomb threats, for example, we are working to create a proportionate response that gives us the legal tools and range of options that addresses the individual situation. In any case of domestic or sexual violence, we believe it's not only to consult with the victim, but to create a real consensus with that victim whenever possible about the resolution of their case. I'm not able to comment about any case that's sealed under the YTA, the Youthful Training Act, but I can confirm that we consult with victims, survivors, and all cases in the sensitive nature. The Youthful Training Act is another imperfect tool that is available to prosecutors, defendants, and the courts. We know that the brain is still developing until a person is in their mid-20s, yet in all too many cases we've seen young persons incarcerated offenses for decades, if not life, and burdened with a felony conviction. YTA is a tool that can be used to stem the epidemic of mass incarceration and create sentencing reforms that handle each case in an appropriate manner. And that's certainly all well and good. It could be interesting to see how many times she's actually used this and whether or not it's the platform of these players being basketball players that got them this kind of deal and how long this is actually being used and how often this is actually being used, but certainly be something very much worth looking at. As well as a survivor coming out and alleging three players assaulted her 1 week after the 2015 Final Four, and that the university tried to get her not to report, with mental health professionals telling her to, quote, just get yourself better and that it would be best for you not to tell the police. She also alleges that the university, quote, made it clear that if she chose to notify the police, she faced an uphill battle that would create anxiety and unwanted media attention and publicity, as had happened for many other female students who were sexually assaulted by well-known athletes, close quote. There were also allegations this week that the interim president of the university offered a survivor of the Larry Nassar scandal $250,000 and tried to get a settlement without their lawyers being present. So a lot of allegations involving Michigan State in the institutional failures, not only in the wider university, but also with the field of athletics. And then men's basketball coach Brian Meehan of Brandeis University, one of the winningest coaches in their program's history in Division III, has not been keeping players recently. And anonymous players have alleged that Meehan told a black player, quote, I'll ship you back to Africa. And then also had black players mimic the hear no evil, speak no evil, see no evil monkeys. A lot of these racial issues, as well as some allegations of nepotism where players who were injured didn't necessarily get treated very well, but when Meehan's own kids were injured and who are also on the basketball team, they got extra chances with players being taken out of the game so his kids could play as well. Players said that they went to the Human Resources Department of the university, but Athletic Director Lynn Dempsey didn't do a whole lot. And ultimately, after Deadspin started asking for information, Brandeis University came forward and fired Meehan. So only after news started looking into this did he get canned. You're listening to Not Another Sports Show, a radical look at the world of sports, Left Sports Radio. We've been talking about why the NCAA needs to be abolished, the horrific handling of cases by various universities, and a look at the Cinderella Loyola Chicago's treatment of non-tenure track professors. Coming up in our final segment, we'll be talking about athletes speaking out, horrid stadium deals, the Olympic scandal in U.S. sports gets bigger, and some happy news to close out our broadcast. So let's get into it with This Week in Other Sports News. In other sports news, Football Club Cincinnati, the stadium deal just won't die. The city council now wants a $200 million stadium, with the taxpayers putting in $48.8 million, and the team paying about $1 million a year in property taxes. The team is now going to get land where the Willard R. Stargell Stadium currently is. That stadium will be demolished, and then a new stadium for high school football will be built and developed. So that stadium deal still won't die. We will certainly keep an eye out on this, as a number of residents are incredibly mad that this stadium is being built with so much public money coming in to build it when the owners could easily and totally afford it themselves. Conor McGregor of UFC showed up to UFC 223 Media Day to confront his opponent after he had an altercation with McGregor's training partner. McGregor and his entourage attacked a bus and injured some fighters who had to be taken off the card when he threw a dolly at their bus and shattered their window. He is now facing misdemeanor assault charges and felony criminal mischief charges, and has also been stripped of the light heavyweight title. And so we will certainly be keeping an eye on this and whether or not he's going to be treated with the kid gloves, bad pun. But we'll certainly be keeping an eye on that story as it moves forward. In golf news, Augusta, the all-men site that hosts the Masters, finally let in women, Condi Rice and a billionaire named Darla Moore. Well, now there's four women, and in 2019, they will host the first ever Augusta National Women's Amateur Championship. With only 18 of the holes being played at Augusta, and only 30 of the 72 players in the tournament getting to actually play at Augusta. This is only 68 years after the LPGA started, and it's in direct competition with one of the first major LPGA championships of the year. It's also for amateurs, so none of the pros get to play. None of the pros get to help improve attention to women's golf. This is really just smacking of a PR stunt for Augusta. See, we're holding a women's event. Don't look too far into the details, because then you'll see that the whole thing is just this giant sham and a big problem. That this is always the issue. They've also said that Bobby Jones and Clifford Roberts left behind a legacy of always trying to contribute meaningfully to the game of golf. And I laughed hysterically when I first read that. The guy who created a club who didn't have its first non-white member until 1991 contributed meaningfully to the game of golf, or let its first women in until 2012, wanted to contribute meaningfully to the game of golf, and then run an amateur event in competition with the LPGA 68 years after the LPGA was created. Talk about contributing meaningfully to golf, maybe at a glacial pace. Meanwhile, in Olympics news, U.S. Taekwondo's coach Jean Lopez, has been suspended. And trigger warning, we are talking about issues of sexual assault here. After an investigation found a, quote, decades-long pattern of sexual misconduct by an older athlete coach abusing his power to groom, manipulate, and ultimately sexually abuse younger female athletes. That this has not been just the isolated thing in gymnastics. It's not been just an isolated thing in one sport. That we're seeing this happen in swimming, it happening in Taekwondo, and there needs to be some massive house cleaning in the U.S. Olympic Committee and all the people who happen to know about this and all of the major players in this that happen to be aware of these things happening. We also saw Brit Tom Daly at the Commonwealth Games win the 10-meter synchronized diving event, and during the presser for winning his gold medal, used it to talk about politics, saying, quote, "There are 37 countries where it's illegal to be who I am out of all the Commonwealth, so hopefully we can reduce that number between now and then. Coming to the Gold Coast and being able to live as an openly gay man is really important in being able to feel comfortable with who you are when standing on that diving board. For 37 countries that are here participating, that's very much not the case. Going to Russia can be scary because you've got to compete in front of lots of people, and lots of people know that I've got a husband. I think you got to face those things and try to make change. There's a lot of things that will take a long time to change, but I feel like the Commonwealth, I think we could really help push some of those nations to relax their laws on anti-gay stuff." And he's absolutely right that athletes should be able to freely be who they are without facing major repercussions. And continuing to allow countries in that have horrific human rights abusing laws is a very real problem. It's certainly a very real idea that we need to continue to be worried about. We're also going to be talking some lacrosse news with the Dakota Premier Lacrosse League. Two Native American majority teams, the Seven Flames, Suzbeska, and the Lightning Stick Society, were all expelled from the league. The coaches and players said that there was a lot of anti-Native racism happening. And league administrator Corey Mitchell was recorded in a conversation saying, "I don't want to associate with guys like the coach of Seven Flames, who always want to make it more than just a game. Whenever there's a conflict that comes up with Cody's teams," the coach of Seven Flames, "it's never because the ref exists inside the human condition and people make mistakes. It's because he always saying there's a racial issue involved. He asked me to address racial training or something at referees clinics and coaches clinics. That's not part of the curriculum USA Lacrosse delivers. And quite honestly, I know there's racism out there and there are people who are racist and I get that. But what I'm seeing is that my focus has to be on training our officials to recognize and call when there's a penalty," close quote. Yes, and they also need to recognize and call when there's overt racism coming from other players or the stands. It's not a mutually exclusive thing to be able to recognize and call penalties while also being able to recognize and call overt racism when it's happening. Deadspin went and got access to the files as to why the teams were removed, and for each instance was able to explain, here's what actually happened and why it's not that big of a deal, and if it was that big of a deal, why did they wait so long to start removing these teams? If it really was that big of a deal, if it was really that big of a problem, why did they wait that long to start removing them? And now U.S. Lacrosse has said that they are investigating into this, too, and we will certainly be keeping an eye out on this, because taking away access to athlete sports and highlighting the fact that they're losing access to these sports because of anti-Native racism and overt racism is a very real, scary problem. And as we started at the beginning of this show talking about some happy news, we are also going to end the week with some happy news. This week saw a boxing match between Francisco Vargas and Rod Salka. The American Rod Salka had a match where he wore trunks emblazoned with America First, and the pattern on his blue trunks was that of a brick wall, highlighting the Donald Trump brick wall on the southern border fighting his Mexican opponent. Well, during the match, the Tomato King Rod Salka was beaten so badly that his trainers stopped the fight and would not let him go out for the seventh round. That in the fifth round, he was knocked on his butt with an uppercut and he was basically taken apart by Francisco Vargas. And that's the thing. When people want to wear these kinds of trolling things, or people want to come out and start making racist statements, or people want to come out and start making overtly bigoted statements, the direct confrontation of them shows how they will fold faster than Superman on laundry day. And so, big props to Mr. Vargas. This has been your most recent episode of Not Another Sports Show, NASRadicalSports.com, a radical look at the world of sports. Our show is available for broadcast on college and community radio stations, low-power FM stations, and any of the over 180 stations of the Pacifica Radio Network. If you can't listen live or you happen to miss any of today's show, you can get access by subscribing to our podcast feed on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, the Google Play Store, and editions of our broadcast are also available at NASRadicalSports.com. You can send us your feedback, your thoughts about program coverage, your ideas for future shows and updates to at NAS Radio Sports on Twitter, facebook.com/notanothersportsshow, nasradicalsports@gmail.com, or our NAS Radical Sports contact page on our website. We've got a lot of news this week to talk about, and so we ran through all of that. Big props to a lot of the players speaking out and using their platforms as they continue to speak out and use their platforms. Think about the Jackie Robinson anniversary as we go to air. It's, you know, April 14th, 2018, April 15th being the anniversary of the holiday. And so make sure that you are checking out the real words of Dr. King as well as the real words of Jackie Robinson as we go off the air. We will catch you again. We go to air. It's, you know, April 14th, 2018, April 15th being the anniversary of the holiday. And so make sure that you are checking out the real words of Dr. King as well as the real words of Jackie Robinson as we go off the air. We will catch you again.
drugs. so low. You're so, you've been waiting in the sun too.
Until dawn in the happy land.
In the happy land.
As the night lingers on, we'll be safe until dawn in the happy land. 'Cause your daddy left home, mama's still on the phone. Lost believing, love's deceiving, always going when gone. Night lingers on, we'll be safe until dawn.
Close the door and leave your key. You think you got me, but you see.
got no more money to spend. She smiled when she saw me coming through that door. When I left, she said, come back again. I watched them lonesome boxcar wheels turning down the tracks out of town. And it's on that lonesome railroad track I wanna lay my burden down. I was raised on a farm the first years of my life. Life was pretty good, they say. I'll probably live to be some ripe old age. Death will just stay out of my way. This world can take my money and time, but it sure can't take my soul.